him, a recent speaker at Vanderbilt University began his address with the statement, whether you like it or not, Vanderbilt University is known away from Nashville as the home of the agrarian. Nearly 50 years after the first publication of the Agrarian Manifesto, I'll Take My Stand, it has been reissued for a fourth time. Ridiculed, condemned, and championed, as Mr. Louis Rubin has said in his introduction to the 1962 edition, it has been everything except ignored. In a country where state governors boast of the acquisition of new industry for their states as a measure for judging the success of their administration, the agrarians have been condemned for opposing industrialization, or, in other words, according to the critics. Although some few writers have championed the views of the agrarians, many more have taken issue with them and have called them unrealistic and non-progressive. At this time of economic turmoil and industrial disaster, many thoughtful people are taking a second look at the proposals made 50 years ago by the 12 Southerners. What were these proposals which created so much controversy? The agrarian movement, as I view it, was directed towards the realization of a community conducive to the creative life of the artist, poet, and scholar in peaceful and pleasant surroundings away from the noise and tempo of city life. The fugitives, often confused with the agrarians, were poets. They also originated at Vanderbilt and published their poetry magazine, The Fugitive, during the years 1922 to 1925. They preceded the agrarians by several years. Four of the fugitive poets were leaders in the agrarian movement, and both groups were revolting against an industrial society. The agrarians thought the environment they were seeking could best be found in an agricultural setting. Some of the group objected to being called agrarian. According to one writer, the name agrarian tagged them, and many of their critics ridiculously proposed that they should go out and plow. For a better understanding of the agrarian point of view, I want to quote excerpts from the statement made by Frank Owsley at the fugitive reunion in 1956. He began by saying that he thought the agrarian movement was a revolt against something and a revolt for something. Many of us, he said, had been working in different fields of human activity. I had been doing research work in history, in Southern and sectional history, and more aware, both as an individual as well as a member of a group of friends, that the people of America were losing the basic values of civilization, that we were going as a nation into materialism, that that money value had become the real basic value, that the sense of community was disappearing, that the whole civilization in this country was becoming cruder and cruder, that the things we thought a civilized country stood for were disappearing. We became, I think, in our writing, very deliberately provocative. We advocated, I suppose, an agrarian way of life as being the only examples in history where civilization had developed, and also a belief that the high-powered modern industrialization and materialism would not even develop or maintain a civilization very long. Summing up briefly then, I think our revolt was against materialism. The same thing in a way that the fugitives had revolted against, and against stereotyped forms of living and thinking. But it was a revolt to something, and it might not have been the right thing, but it was in the right direction, perhaps. These remarks were made 26 years after the first publication of I'll Take My Stand and represent, I believe, the thinking of most of the agrarians. Apropos the subject of Mr. Lytle's paper, The Agrarian View After 50 Years, I want to tell you of a panel discussion which I attended recently at Vanderbilt University. The subject for the discussion was The Delusionary Character of Perceptions of Progress, moderated by Lyle Lanier, one of the three surviving agrarians. His essay, In I'll Take My Stand, was entitled A Critique of the Philosophy of Progress, and this article was, to a certain extent, the basis for the discussion. In preparation for the panel, Mr. Lanier had made an outline of suggested topics, two of which I would like to discuss at this time. Under the heading, The Idea of Progress in the Ethos of American Industrial Society, Mr. Lanier gave as a definition of progress the accepted conventional meaning of the word. Progress is beneficent social change based upon continuous economic growth, more specifically, ever-increasing production of goods and services to meet expanding human needs. The principal instrumentalities of progress, as listed, were science and technology, education, economic free enterprise, corporate industrial organization and management, and democratic political institutions. The gains expected from such developments were higher standards of living, increasing individual happiness and well-being, steadily improving society of the family, community, state, region, and the nation, and growing international affluence and goodwill. Some of the results of the pursuit of progress, as outlined by Mr. Lanier, were listed under the heading, The Ironic Incongruity Between Assumed Benefits of Progress and Its Deleterious Byproducts. The first in the list of these harmful byproducts of industrial progress deals with the degradation of our natural environment, air and water pollution, destruction of forests, depletion of soil fertility, erosion, desolation of the landscape by such industries as strip mining, decimation of wild animal life, depletion of mineral and fossil resources. Another large area of harmful byproducts deals with the impairment of human health by the use of agricultural chemicals, food additives, and artificial foods, insufficiently tested drugs, and the results to our health of occupational hazards such as exposure to cancer-producing chemicals and radiation, dangers from nuclear waste and explosives. We face daily such hazards as was experienced by the people who lived near Three Mile Island, and yet industry must have the necessary energy in order to continue to produce ever-increasing amounts of goods. Urbanization has brought a decline in the quality of life, as, for example, the inner city blight, housing overcrowding, juvenile delinquency and crime, drug abuse, racial and ethnic discord, noise, traffic congestion, and the abnormal tempo of urban existence. There has been a deterioration of social life by family disintegration. Divorce has reached an all-time high, followed by impaired parent-child relations. Community ties have been weakened, and social and religious institutions have suffered as a result. We have been plagued with economic disorders, such as poverty, unemployment, uncontrolled inflation, declining productivity, energy crisis, mounting consumer and governmental debt, foreign trade imbalance, the steady decline in the value of gold and the weakness of the dollar. International tensions have increased and our national security has been endangered by the possibility of nuclear war and annihilation. Only recently, 20 pounds of enriched uranium, enough to make several atomic bombs, was reported missing from a plant at Irwin, Tennessee. Prior to this, during the past several years, 245 pounds of the same material has been discovered missing from this plant. So far, none of the missing substance has been found. It has been conjectured that someday this destructive material will get into the hands of desperate people and we shall all face annihilation. Tensions have increased between industrialized and underdeveloped nations, complicated by conflicting ideologies of communistic and democratic nations within the industrialized world. Finally, for the artist, poet, and scholar, there has been a general dissatisfaction with the inability of a civilization directed to material improvement to satisfy the human spirit. All of these destructive byproducts can be traced to progress in terms of industrial development. ABC Television made a study of the effects of the seemingly inevitable repression we are facing on the various regions of the United States. In every case, it was found that the industrial areas would suffer most. The agricultural areas of the West and South will be hurt less than the great industrial areas of the North and Middle West. Detroit, Chicago, New York, and other large industrial cities of the North stand to suffer much more than the agricultural areas. A number of books have been written focusing on the inevitable decline of economic progress in the industrial countries. And here in the United States, we are beginning to witness such a decline. Some of the social changes destined to produce economic decline include excessive population growth worldwide, dwindling natural resources and energy shortages, the growing international competition between industrialized and undeveloped nations for an adequate supply of resources. Time does not permit further discussion, but it must be noted that I Take My Stand offers some hope for a happy existence after the economic decline, and perhaps that is one reason for the revival of interest in the book. If we could change our measures of economic growth and success from quantitative to qualitative growth, we would understand a great deal better the proposals made 50 years ago by the 12 Southerners. I would like to close these remarks with a quotation from Edward F. Renshaw's book, The End of Progress, Adjusting to a No-Growth Economy. Quote, an end to growth in material output would not necessarily be incompatible with economic growth of kinds not well measured by our present stock of indicators. Notably, growth in the quality of goods and services, with individual excellence, with devotion to one's craft, with love for one's children, with high achievement in the arts, with eloquence and with precise thought or careful expression, with enhanced sense of community, with deepened religious faith, or with care for the scarred, yet still nurtured earth itself, end quote. Hoping to inspire the kind of growth suggested by Mr. Renshaw, which would satisfy the human spirit, is, I believe, the reason the 12 Southerners took their stand. Thank you.